You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Medical research saves lives. There's no arguing that fact. But here's a disconnect. Patients are every gender, every race, but medical research has historically been more focused on white men or male test animals and less on females and people of color. So let's talk about what that means. Jamie Mitchell is an assistant professor of social work at the University of Michigan, investigator with the Michigan Center for Urban African American Aging Research, and co-director of the Healthier Black Elders Center in Detroit, and Jill Becker, chair of the biopsychology area at the University of Michigan School of Psychology. It is so good to have you both here. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having us.
My pleasure.
So, Jamie, tell me, how much of a disparity overall are we seeing in the race of human participants in health research?
I think depending on the type of research it is, we see a pretty large disparity. And that's for a number of reasons, right? Some of it can be that some researchers find it difficult to include diverse samples or to maybe build the type of trust that's required to kind of get diverse participants engaged in research. But sometimes I think it's just being oblivious and just thinking research is research. What does it matter if we don't have, you know, different people from different cultures, from different genders, from different age ranges represented? But in reality, that's a huge issue because we can't really trust that those results apply to different people when they're only tested on white populations.
And Jill, what about disparities in sex in terms of animal subject research, which is a very big thing in psychology?
So in terms of animal subjects, it depends on the particular field of medicine or psychology that's being studied, but it ranges from 70 to 90% male subjects in most of the research that's being done.
So the bottom line, I guess we have to ask, is why should the average person care about whether their race or their sex is represented in medical research?
Well, in terms of sex, we know that there are sex differences throughout the body and in the brain, all of which affect the outcome of the results of particular pilot studies or experimental studies that are going to lead to new therapies for humans. And most of the sex differences in animals are reflected in sex differences in humans, so that if you only study males, you're developing therapies that are not going to apply to women when they move to clinical trials. And that can result in a lot of money wasted and failed efforts to even find a therapy for particular medical disorders such as depression, where 90% of the subjects are male in the basic animal research, but you know, three times as many women suffer from anxiety and depression.
What's your take on this, Jamie?
I think it's the same when you're thinking about race and also ethnicity and culture, in the sense that, you know, I also study doctor-patient communication. And one of the biggest questions that patients have is this treatment going to work for me, right? Mm-hmm. And so we don't have a lot of confidence to be able to tell patients, yes, we've actually tested this Alzheimer's intervention, this depression intervention with people who look like you, who may have a similar background and upbringing as you, who may have faced some of the same stressors, such as discrimination, as you. And so we don't have a lot of confidence to be able to say that, yes, this particular intervention is a good fit for you. And that trial and error doesn't sound so good when it's you and it's your body. I mean, it's your disease, right? And so we really need more diversity in the way that we test different behavioral interventions, all kinds of research, so that we can say with more confidence, yes, we have treatments that are better suited to the background, the culture, mm-hmm. the experiences, you know, maybe the social norms, the way that masculinity is expressed differently in different cultures. And so we need more research that better engages different populations so that we can have that confidence.
To that point, can either of you pull up an example in layman's terms, either from your own research or for other projects you know about some advancement or some finding that may not have been found if there was only a focus on males or on whites?
Mm-hmm. I know, for example, I don't do this particular area of work, but we have a good body of knowledge on prostate cancer research. And one of the things that we now know is that African-American men have a much higher prevalence of prostate cancer. And so they're getting it at earlier ages in their 50s and 60s, as opposed to 70s and 80s. They also have higher mortality from prostate cancer, right? And they also need to be screened differently. So maybe more quickly, sooner in life, or more aggressively, particularly if they have a family history. And so without research that specifically looks at the way that prostate cancer operates in African-American men, we would continue to see these disparities in death and in disease that all of our current recommendations had been set to white males, and those just didn't apply to black males.
We are talking about life and death.
Absolutely.
In cardiovascular disease, for example, has been primarily thought to be a male disorder. All of the research was done on males, and even the characterization of it was described in terms that fit males. And yet now we know that it's the number one killer of women, and the symptoms are different for men and women. And when you start doing the basic animal research, you discover the mechanisms mediating how the plaques are formed and so on are different because of the presence of estrogen in the blood.
Absolutely.
So it's, you know, the sex differences in how the research was initially designed have led to gross disparities in outcomes for men and women.
Knowing that, it is to an outsider, to a layperson watching, kind of mind-blowing that it wasn't obvious and that, you know, there weren't female animals included in this study. As you say, was it just because it didn't occur to researchers in the past?
Well, in terms of sex differences, I think the underlying premise in basic research was that if it was important, it would be present in both males and females. And the little differences weren't important. They weren't fundamental to the disease. And yet now we know, even when the behavior, you know, the way that males and females present is the same, the underlying neurological or biological mechanisms mediating the disease can be very different. And so we're now coming to understand that fundamental differences are present throughout the brains and bodies of males and different that just aren't reflected in the commonalities.
And I think we've just evolved as a society as well to recognize the importance of studying differences, both differences between groups and also differences within groups, right? And so, for example, at the federal level, we now have a National Institute of Minority Health and Health Disparities. That's the youngest institute we have at the National Institutes of Health, right? So it took many years for that standalone institute to kind of come into its own and to get some federal funding and to be able to fund the type of researchers who will do this specific type of work that's needed.
I'm interested, Jill, through your work in biopsychology at U of M, how has it been for you to get funding for research on female subjects?
Well, so I've been doing this research since the late 70s.
It's been a while. You've got some perspective for
us. I joined the faculty in 1987, and I have been studying sex differences throughout my career. It has always been tough. I have always had to justify studying both males and females in a way that other people don't have to justify the research that they're doing. So I've had to argue for the fundamental importance of how males' changes in the brains are different from females' changes in the brains. So arguing that the underlying neurochemistry and neurobiology is important to understand for both sexes.
Is it getting any better?
It is getting better. The National Institutes of Health, the NIH, have mandated that both male and female subjects be included not only in clinical research, but in basic research now. People now need to argue why they're not including both males and females. That makes it easier for you to study both males and females. It still is necessary to justify studying sex differences because you need to include larger numbers of animals in order to have enough subjects for the statistical analyses that allow you to know for sure that there's something going on there.
On the social behavioral side, we're kind of on the opposite side or we have the opposite experience. And so those of us who study within group, right? So we might say, you know, diabetes is a particular issue among Latinx or Latino males and a growing issue among African-American males. And we just like to study those groups, right? And so a lot of times the pushback that we get is why not study them in relation to white males, right? And so we also often have to also make the argument there is some value in just studying particular populations of people who are really burdened by a disease and they deserve to be kind of studied and understood in their own context and not always have to be compared to a white reference population as well.
So in terms of your work, you know, you're with the health your Black Elders Center. You are with the Michigan Center for Urban African American Aging Research. let's understand the funding fight for anybody in science. It's the hill you die on every
day, getting funding.
But what about, you know, the kind of specific research you're doing?
So I think we've been really fortunate because we are funded under what's called the Resource Centers on Minority Aging. And so as it stands since last year, there are 18 centers around the country that study different minority populations and their health issues around aging, right? And so because I think we're working in relation to aging, which is something we're all going to deal with or are dealing with, it's a very important issue in this country. There's some pretty robust federal funding for those who are prepared and are doing that kind of work. And we've been able to tap into that. But I think if we weren't nested under that kind of title or under that research theme, we might be struggling just as badly with other groups who are out here trying to do work on particular sex or gender or race or ethnic differences as well.
That was Jamie Mitchell, who's an assistant professor of social work at the University of Michigan. She's joined today by Jill Becker, who's chair of the biopsychology area at U of M's Department of Psychology, as we explore disparity in who is participating in healthcare research, whether it be human, whether it be animal. The National Institutes of Health, you kind of alluded to this, they've been working since 1993 to push for more inclusive research studies, including that mandate that all research funded by the NIH include women and minorities. So 1993, 2019, why are we still talking about disparity?
Well, the inclusion of women in clinical research at the NIH in 1993 was an important change in the federal mandate, but it didn't require that enough women be included in research that we were able to come up with findings that separated the results by sex. We don't have enough data at this point to even know whether many of the things that we have been studying are different for males and females. The result has been males and females have been lumped together in the data analysis because for most clinical trials, it's about 60% men and 40% women. And that usually isn't enough to be able to parse apart the differences between the sex or genders.
And what's the answer to researchers who argue, well, I can get more men to say yes than women?
It's actually the opposite way around, believe
really?
It or not. I would say that depending on the type of work you're doing, certainly in behavioral research, the vast majority of research participants are women. So at the Healthier Black Elders Center, we actually have a registry of volunteer research participants who are trained in research and they are ready to participate in non-invasive research. It's called a participant resource pool, 85% women. We have about 1,500 African-American older adults in that pool, 85% women. And so our challenge is actually in recruiting men who are, you know, trusting the research process and willing to engage.
Yeah. In clinical trials, it tends to be more men than women, primarily because women frequently have to deal with childcare issues. And if they're inpatient studies, it's much more difficult to get women to participate.
So what kinds of important changes do each of you think need to be made in the research world and in the funding world to close this gap we're talking about in sex and race?
Yeah. So one of the challenges that we're finding is there was an article that recently came out through, I want to say NIH. It was looking at NIH rates of funding and the types of researchers who get the money, right, to do this important work. And what they recently found, and it was picked up by several different news outlets, is that unfortunately, the types of researchers who study behavioral interventions, who actually work with communities, and so they don't necessarily work with cells or work at the molecular level, but they work around helping people to stop smoking, helping people to exercise more.
Visible stuff.
Yeah. It's pretty tough because you've got to build trust and you've got to spend some time in these communities to kind of build those relationships. And you've got to work with behavioral interventions, which can be, you know, pretty tough. But those people actually tend to get funded significantly less than folks who do basic science, bench science, molecular science.
Funded less.
Yes, they do. And those researchers also tend to be researchers of color. And so if you're thinking about who's going into communities, recruiting people of color to do work on disparities that impact people of color, it's usually people who came from those communities, grew up, got a PhD or an MD and decided to go back and reinvest in those communities. And they have a more difficult time getting behavioral or intervention-based funding than folks who do more lab-based work. And so that is a disparity that just came out in the research.
So I think for research that studies both sexes, what is happening is everybody has to study both sexes now. And there's some really interesting results that are starting to drive the science. I see new graduate students really wanting to study sex differences or both males and females more often these days than they did 10 years ago. And people are discovering that there are some really interesting scientific differences between the sexes that I think is going to start increasing the attention and the excitement around the inclusion of females and women in basic and clinical research. For example, if you look at depression in both animal models and in humans, if you look at just the genetic changes associated with anxiety and depression, the genes that are changed in both sexes that overlap is in the single digits. It's a very small overlap between the genetic effects on the brain of depression. So we call this the same disease in males and females, and yet it, you know, what's going on in the brain is so different that we can't even see that much of an overlap.
And I think there are more researchers. I think about the way that Alzheimer's, for example, is being funded at a pretty high rate right now by the National Institutes of Health, which is kind of our main federal body that provides grant funding for this type of work. And I think a lot of researchers are actually partnering with basic scientists mm-hmm. and bringing together behavioral science and basic science and saying, okay, what can depression is a multifaceted issue, just like diabetes or heart disease, right? Health is messy. It involves where you work and the stress and where you live and pollution and all of these different things. And so how can we get together with basic scientists and write grant applications that involve the kinds of mechanisms that the government will actually fund, but also really try to get at the heart of what's happening in people's daily lives that you can't control in a lab?
The students sitting in your classroom today mm-hmm. are going to be unleashed on the world. That's and right. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, I think they're going to be really excited to go out and study sex differences. They're outraged when they hear me say that these studies, these drugs weren't even tested on women, and they're just giving them to them as though they're small men. And they're not actually even adjusting for size, usually. And so they are charged to go out there and begin to study both sexes and begin to learn what's going on. So I'm excited for the future.
Absolutely. In our Michigan Center for Urban African American Aging Research, one of the things that we are charged to do by the federal government is to train up-and-coming junior scientists. And so over the past 20 years, long before I came into the group, they have trained over 70 junior scientists, most of whom identify as minority or underrepresented, and all of them are focused on disparities work with mostly older African-American adults. And so they're excited to do this work. We're helping them get funding to do this work. And they've had a lot of success over the years because of that support.
Fascinating conversation. I want to thank you so much, Jill Becker, who is chair of the biopsychology area at U of M's Department of Psychology, and Jamie Mitchell, an investigator with the Michigan Center for Urban African-American Aging Research. And also, she co-directs the Healthier Black Elders Center in Detroit. Great talking with both of you. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for having me.